You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Coming up on NFL Live, is Matthew Stafford's false positive COVID-19 test a sign of more difficulties to come for the league and its testing protocols? Plus, the NFC East race should be wide open, a thing of beauty. Our panel debates where the strengths lie for each team and who's gonna win the division. And a bevy of head coaches held media sessions today. You'll hear from some of them throughout the show, including Sean Payton and all his new ideas as training camps continue to ramp up. Hello, everybody. Welcome to NFL Live, the best football show on TV, and my favorite panel, too. We got Lewis Riddick, Jeff Saturday, and Jeff Darlington. I'm Diana Rossini with you for the next hour. So the NFL isn't allowing the release of the results of any of these COVID-19 test guys or even comment on them. But the league is trying to quarantine players who've tested positive or those that have been around those with it, which is this newly created COVID-19 list that we've been seeing and hearing about. Well, Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford has been removed from the COVID-19 reserve list after what the team called a false positive test. The Lions said Stafford never had COVID-19 and instead had a false positive test after two negative tests last Tuesday and Wednesday. Well, Detroit, they released a very lengthy statement about the situation. They are saying, today we removed Matthew Stafford from the COVID IR list and onto the active roster as a result of a false positive test result. He was forced due to the NFL and the NFLPA protocols to sit out until he received two negative tests. His testing sequence for the pre-entry period was negative, negative, false positive. The next three tests were all negative. To be clear, Matthew does not have COVID-19 and never has had COVID-19, and the test in question was a false positive. Also, all of Matthew's family have been tested and everyone is negative. All right, so that was the Detroit statement. Then shortly after, Matthew Stafford's wife, Kelly, went on Instagram. And here's what she had to say, and it was a lot. She said, the past 4 days have been somewhat of a nightmare. For 24 hours, we believed my husband was positive for COVID. We were all tested the day after, and we were all negative, including Matthew. He tested negative again, then again, again, and again. Even after we knew it was false positive, our school told us they were not allowed back. I was approached in a grocery store and told I was endangering others, she said. My kids were harassed and they were kicked off a playground. I was told I needed to wait in my car when trying to pick up food, and people closest to us had to get tested just so they could go back to work. I don't blame these scenarios on any of the people directly involved in the situation. I understand where they are coming from, but I do blame the NFL. I blame the NFL for not holding themselves accountable. These are people's lives and livelihoods that are in those results in their test sites. Maybe we should be absolutely positive a person has COVID before releasing that info to the world. She tagged the league 6 times in the post, so I think it's pretty safe to say he is not happy at all with how this was handled. And here's the thing, guys. Detroit never announced Stafford's tested positive, nor did the league, but it did get leaked out to the media. So that's how it got out there. So the league is really in a tough spot here. So, Jeff, I want to start with you here. Do you think that there needs to be adjustments made to how we are handling this? Because we've never had to deal with anything like this before.
Well, look, the NFL is in a tough situation here when it comes to testing, and I would argue that society in general is dealing with some of those same issues. Now, I can't really speak to what the Staffords are going through as a family when it comes to that, but it's really not that different than what a lot of people are going through. Look, if you have a false positive, then generally speaking, there is an expectation in society to quarantine until it's proven otherwise. It's a very difficult situation that we're all in. The idea that anybody would harass her family seems absolutely outrageous, but that's a whole different conversation. But speaking specifically to the NFL's protocols, look, these are uncharted territories. It feels to me like the protocols that are in place are generally pretty sound. The idea of privacy, though, is something that they should continue to evaluate and assess. And if they can take some of what the Staffords went through and apply it to future situations to make it better, great. I just don't, I think it's a little bit dangerous to cast too much blame for a situation where everybody is sort of trying to figured this out on the fly, to be quite honest.
Yeah, certainly. And Lou, so you have all the GMs in the league right now looking at this situation. Everyone is trying to figure out what the best way to go about this is. But how do you protect your players from going through this?
I don't know if you necessarily can 100%, to be honest with you. Look, I mean, we all see that people are able to get a hold of the league's official transaction roster and see who is being released, who is being waived, who is being claimed, what teams are putting in claims, what players are on the different reserve lists. And that isn't because the league is distributing it. It's because there is someone or someones who are leaking these to the public, and then it becomes public information. And in this instance, obviously, you can see it can have some very negative consequences in terms of how it can affect a player's family when we're dealing with something as explosive and as important as COVID-19. And that is an issue. Now, as far as the false positives are concerned, you're right. I mean, that is something that is plaguing society overall. And it's something that the individual companies that are in charge of conducting these tests is going to continue to have to work out. And then that gets into a whole bigger problem about whether or not the testing is reliable, whether or not we have enough testing. And that's just a whole bigger issue. But as far as protecting players' privacy, protecting all of us, all of our privacy, that's very important. That's very, very important. And you just hate to see it in this kind of situation because you could feel for Matthew's family, his wife and his children, and you can understand how people will start freaking out over the fact that, hey, if your husband tested positive, then you should be quarantining and you shouldn't be in this store and your kids shouldn't be on this playground. You can see how it could have a trickle-down snowball type effect. And this really comes back to protecting the players' privacy. So the league and the teams themselves are going to have to really clamp down on that and make sure that these official transaction registers are not getting out there so people are discussing this, you know, freely like they are at this point in time.
Yeah, I agree completely, Lou, with you and Jeff both, honestly. This is just one of those unfortunate circumstances. There's not a whole lot you can do about it. I mean, if we're going to have a subset of part of the roster where guys who have either been in contact with somebody or have tested positive for COVID and they're going to be able to pull roster spots up and down and do those things, it's going to be next to impossible to keep everybody, all the information hidden. I just don't see a way that you can do it. I think from what each of you have said, this is not easy. And this is not just a football issue. This is an issue that our society as a whole is dealing with. And when you're talking about testing as many times as you are, everyday testing, and something comes up as a false positive, it's just one of those things that we're going to have to learn to adapt. Is there another way we can do it? Is there a way we can go, can we get another rapid test right after the positive? All of those things, but it's all going to be worked out in time. And again, we're everybody's very new to this. Jeff said it best. We're all doing this on the fly. I mean, nobody expected this. Everybody is going to have to adapt and be adaptable as they process through. As what happened to the Stafford family, you hate it. You don't appreciate anybody treating someone that way. But as far as trying to keep it out of the public, when you have the roster and you're opening roster spots because someone does, I just don't see it. I mean, I think it's a very difficult thing to do. I'm sure they're going to be discussing these things in rooms the next 2 or 3 weeks, trying to kind of work out the bugs, of the problem. But, man, there's just no simple answer. I wish there was.
Yeah, and, guys, we are in a time right now when thinking outside the box can really give you an edge because so many teams have played out the scenario of what happens if our starting quarterback and the backups all test positive before a game. Some teams are actually discussing quarantining one of their quarterbacks. The first time I heard it was earlier this offseason from Bruce Arians on Chris Long's Green Light podcast, and he said he might quarantine one of his quarterbacks. Now, other coaches around the league are all starting to think about it.
Yeah, we've floated around that idea a little bit, have not made a decision on that at this point, but that's certainly, you know, something that's not out of the realm of possibility.
Conversations that are ongoing still with my staff and offensive guys on staff, you know, Press and Rich, Marty, you know, those guys, and haven't decided anything yet on that. Obviously, but it is something to consider as we move forward.
I feel like when we first heard about it, we all thought maybe it was kind of a joke, but it sounds like it could be somewhat of a decent idea. Lou, what do you think?
Yeah, on the surface, it is a decent idea. It's probably something that you should probably give a lot more consideration to, considering the fact that one positive test, even one false positive test, you could wipe out your entire quarterback room as per the league's protocols. And I just don't understand how you could then play a football game. I mean, it just wouldn't – it would shake the competitive balance foundation to the point where it just would blatantly be unfair if your whole quarterback room had to quarantine because of one positive test. So I think, you know, to safeguard against that, you have to start thinking outside of the box, as you alluded to, in these kind of situations, and kind of get ahead of the curve and say, hey, look, maybe you start thinking about, you know, across all positions, maybe you deem certain players who are just critical as far as you protecting, and maybe you have to quarantine even more than just the quarterback. Maybe you start quarantining a pass rusher, a wide receiver, a certain corner. Maybe you just, you know, you deem certain players as being those that you just cannot play without, and you need to go to, you know, exquisite lengths to make sure that they are available to you. And again, this is one of these things that come up in this time that we're in right now that you never would have considered before. And you're going to have to consider all kinds of things. You have to be very creative in order to safeguard against you just having your roster wiped out and you just not being able to compete fairly.
Yeah, certainly a lot of things are being kind of thrown at the wall. We're trying to figure out what's going to work. And guys, a lot of players right now are trying to figure out whether or not they want to play this season. The deadline for players to opt out of the 2020 season, it's tomorrow at 4:00 Eastern. High-risk individuals could opt out. They're going to receive that $350,000 stipend, whereas those less at risk, they're going to receive $150,000 stipend. Players also have the ability, and this is important, they can opt out later in the season, but here's the only way it can happen. If a family member becomes sick, that's one way, and if a new diagnosis reveals that the player has a high-risk condition. So those are the two ways that can go down. Now, here are some notable players that have already opted out. Linebackers Dante Hightower, C.J. Mosley, both won't be playing. And the Chiefs won't have two players back from last year's Super Bowl winning team. Over the last 24 hours, two Dolphins wide receivers opted out. We had Allen Hurns and Albert Wilson. Here's NFLPA President J.C. Treader and Philip Rivers on the idea of opting out.
Everyone should at least think about it. Obviously, our goal was to give guys options. And then guys make the best decisions for them and their families. So I'm playing this year. I've made my decision.
There wasn't any consideration. I think, again, obviously the health of my family and safety of them is utmost importance. I think like you're in a flu season or anything else, from a standpoint of you just try to, you know, be smart. Another reason is I think at this point, making that decision for me would have been making the decision to be done, period, you know, all retiring, which is nowhere on my mind.
All right, Darlington, let's start with you and go back to what J.C. Treader said. Do we expect a lot more opt-outs between now and that 4:00 deadline on Thursday?
It's a great question, and I generally am inclined to think that no, that most people who would opt out would have already done so, just from the standpoint that it feels like a somewhat decisive move. But I think that the only thing I can say is we keep talking about like societal parallels, right? But I'd imagine there's a lot of people, myself included, that are sitting here saying, do you send your kids back to school if your school is open? And you try to bring that, you continue to milk that decision until the very end, and you take every last minute to do so. And I don't think football players are any different. And the second that we start to think otherwise, we're going to get surprised. So we'll see. I just think that there will be some guys that take this up to the deadline. That being said, it feels like most guys have either said they're choosing to play or that they have already decided to opt out.
Yeah, Jeff, we've heard a few players mention that they're still kind of thinking about it. But to your point, If they're going to make that move, they most likely made it already. But heck, you know, we never know here. But Jeff Saturday here, let's pretend you're a player again. And let's just say this pandemic has another wave here during the season. What's going through your mind now, knowing that's a possibility, that's on the table?
Yeah, I think like everybody else, I'm going to evaluate as time goes forward. I'm not signing anything in blood. And so, you know, if I get 4 weeks, 5 weeks into the season and I felt like it put my family at a tremendous amount of risk or myself at a tremendous amount of risk, there's going to be guys who decide, hey, it's not worth it. And I think that's ultimately that's the right you have. And I think that's what Treader's talking about. I think that's what Philip Rivers says. We all just want as much information as we can get to make the decision. But if for some reason we got halfway into it and things began to change, I think guys would understand what that looks like. And I think from the PA and the NFL, they've done as many things as they can for the opt-out of, hey, what would happen, right? If a family member gets sick, guys are leaving. I can assure you, as a guy who had young children when I was playing and going through it, if my wife got sick, if my kids got sick, if my parents, then I would, it would definitely be a different decision than what I made earlier in the year. And so I think that's what guys have to go through. And you don't play football in a vacuum, right? Like we're no different than anyone else. We're all facing the same decisions, whether our kids go back to school, do we quarantine ourselves in a hotel throughout the whole season? I can assure you all these conversations are happening in these players' homes. There's nobody who's just going, hey, I'm going to go play. And, you know, it doesn't matter. Like everybody's having a process to get to this decision. And you're making it with the information you have today. If in four weeks you have a different set of circumstances, a different amount of information, you will make another one. And that's just the reality of the situation that we're in.
I think something as important as this, you take it all the way to the deadline if need be. There's no reason to rush. You don't get any points for deciding that you're going to play before the clock strikes 12 here. And in this kind of situation where it literally could be life or death, and not just for you, but as Jeff alluded to, your wife, your children, you have a duty, you have a right to make sure that you have all the information and you actually weigh all the information very, very carefully. And you have these discussions. And Jeff's right again. I mean, look, we're all facing it in some form or fashion, even if we're not players in the National Football League, particularly if you have children. I mean, I'm having those discussions daily right now as far as, you know, sending kids back to school and whether it's the hybrid model or it's online model. Do you send them back to school so they can be around their friends? This is serious, serious stuff here. And just because these guys are football players and they're athletes and they're compensated very well to do so, does not mean that they're not human. And does it mean that they're not just thinking about themselves? They need to take their time and they need to take it right up to the very last minute. I know I would do so. If I was playing and had a family right now, you would hear from me. I would make my decision at 11:59:59. Or 3:59:59 if it's 4 o'clock. I'm taking every bit of time I can to make sure I make the right call.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up that point because we just heard from the Bills where cornerback Tre'Davious White said he's still undecided on whether or not he'll play this season. Remember, he was a gigantic part of this defense, named first team All-Pro last season. And according to NFL Next Gen, his 84 targets as the nearest defender were the second most in the NFL without allowing a touchdown in 2019. So he says he'll have a decision soon. Of course, that deadline being at 4 o'clock on Thursday.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Well, the Raiders have been a nomadic franchise, starting in Oakland, capturing 2 Super Bowls in 22 seasons. Then they set sail down the California coast and won another title in Los Angeles, taking home the Lombardi Trophy in the 1983 season. Then after 13 seasons in L.A., they headed right back up north to Oakland, suffering 16 losing campaigns in 25 years and only making the playoffs just 4 times. John Gruden and Mark Davis are now the captains of their latest voyage to the bright lights of Las Vegas. But the bright lights of Vegas a little dim. Earlier this week, we found out that the Raiders made it official. They announced they'll play their inaugural season at Allegiant Stadium without any fans due to the COVID-19 pandemic. All right, so that's the situation with the fans in the stadium. How about on the field? Well, the biggest question mark surrounds the future of this guy, their quarterback, Derek Carr. The Raiders are coming off their fifth losing season in 6 years with Carr, who addressed why he will not opt out this season. Take a listen.
I have a lot to prove to myself. I have a lot to prove to my organization. I'm being completely honest here. I'm tired of being disrespected. So there was no question I was going to play this year. Because I'm tired of, the hype machine that sometimes the NFL can be. I'm done with all that stuff. So you can say good stuff. Like I said, you can say bad stuff. I think you can sense it in the last probably year or so. I just don't care anymore. You say whatever you want. I'm trying to go win this Super Bowl so we can hang one of these banners in this beautiful indoor that we got. And then I want to go try and do it again. And then I want to go try and do it again until I'm too old or they kick me out of this place.
No sleeves and no filter there for Derek Carr. So, Lewis, talking a lot about disrespect. Why is Derek Carr getting disrespected?
Yeah, I think mainly, Diana, it's because, one, they haven't won. They haven't really made up any ground on the Kansas City Chiefs in particular. And two, quarterback play, a lot of it is about, one, winning, and it's about, two, throwing touchdowns and putting points on the board. And despite the fact that Derek had a career year in terms of completion percentage, passing yards, yards per attempt, passer rating, he still wasn't able to put the ball or get the ball in the end zone through the air like he was, say, back in 2015 when he was a legit MVP candidate, where he threw 32 touchdowns as opposed to only 21 touchdowns in 2019. Now, obviously, the Raiders feel as though some of that has to do with the fact that maybe he didn't have enough personnel in order to help him achieve that. So what did they do? They went out this past year in the draft in particular, and they got him some weapons. Look, Henry Ruggs, who they got out of Alabama, and Brian Edwards, who they got out of South Carolina, these two young guys are studs. One of them is super fast, obviously, in Henry Ruggs. Brian Edwards is huge with tremendous catch radius, who can play in the slot and play outside. You know, they have Darren Waller. They have Josh Jacobs. They have one of the best offensive lines on paper in the NFL. So I think this year, if he wants to prove people wrong and make people shut up, he's got a lot of the things going in his favor this year. And it has to line up with John Gruden's play calling. It has to line up with the defense doing their part so they can keep the points down so much of it isn't put on Derek Carr. I mean, as you know, there's a lot of it that goes into whether or not people like quarterbacks and think they're worthy or not. But Derek, he needs to have a career year. They've set the table for him. We'll see what he can do.
Yeah, Darlington, we know that they signed Marcus Mariota in the offseason. So here we are, Derek, kind of right, knowing the pressure's on. So is this really going to be a make-or-break year for Derek?
Absolutely. I mean, no question. Contractually speaking, the Raiders are in a situation where at the end of this season, they could very much move on with the limited guaranteed money remaining in the deal. Mike Mayock has made that very clear, the general manager, very pointedly saying this offseason that this guy has done a really good job, 70% of his passes, 3-1 touchdown interception ratio, all of these factors, but also recognizing the fact that the contract is such that if he doesn't perform, the Raiders can just go ahead and walk away for basically nothing. So it is 100% a make or break year, second year in John Gruden's offense. And look, to Lewis's point, it's all there for him. He's got to prove it.
All right, no one's being that disrespectful. I feel like you guys are just like pointing out the stats here and essentially the reality of what's happened over the last six seasons. So, Jeff Saturday, I need to put this on you. Where are you swinging on this? Do you respect Derek Carr?
Absolutely. Listen, I think Derek Carr, to each guy's point, has had a career that has been a little bit diminished because of the quality of the teams he's played on. And Lewis made the point of last year being a career year for him. Let me show you the difference in when a team wins and when a team doesn't win and kind of the conversation to have. QB1, 70%, QB2, 69%. We talked about the touchdowns, 21 and 8 interceptions, 27-13. You see it, right? One took his team to the Super Bowl, and one is talking about getting respect. So you're looking at Jimmy Garoppolo, and you're looking at Derek Carr. So it just shows you how important it is, the conversation and dialogue you're having, because when you talk about just the quarterback position, it's really tough to put everything at the feet of Derek Carr. Now, Lewis made a great point about all the guys they brought in. Last year, he threw 63% of his passes to somebody in the sixth round or later. So they went out and got him guys, right? So now we're going to say, no excuses, no explanations. We're going to put guys around you and surround you. But to put everything at the foot of a quarterback, we do this all the time in the NFL, is we make it so much about one position. The reality is you have to develop talent, the right coaching staff, the right general manager, the right organization. It all matters. Now, I think with Mayock and Gruden in here, and now year two for Gruden in this system, it will all improve and continue to grow and be better for him. But at the end of the day, we're all trying to throw him out. Hey, you better make sure you got somebody better than him coming in. Yeah. I mean, the reality is this guy throwing up 4,000 yards for what he did. And this is the part, and Lewis made this point, and we used to talk about this at the Colts all the time. The difference in the details of throwing 30 touchdowns or 32 touchdowns and 21 third and shorts, goal line situations, being able to convert drives, and it all goes to quarterback. But the reality is it can be a number of different things, right? The receiver's not where he's supposed to be. All the things that end up happening, putting guys around him, in my opinion, are going to make him better. And as far as Marcus Mariota and being there to come be the guy, he just got run out of town in Tennessee. Like, what are we talking about here, man? Like, I mean, are we saying all of a sudden we're going to hand it to him because he's had, an incredible career compared to Stinky? No, he has not. So if I'm here, I don't care about respect. You got to go thick skin. Again, you can't go and be sensitive about this, but he has not performed at a level where you think, oh, this guy can play in the NFL. He is definitely a starter and very capable of taking this team into the playoffs.
Man, Jeff, you did your homework on Derek Carr today. You just dropped tons of knowledge there. Loving all that effort. We did our homework too. This Raiders team, man, they got a tough schedule. They started off Saints, Patriots, Bills, and Chiefs. So they certainly have a challenge ahead of them as we get ready for the season.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, so lots of head coaches around the league talking this afternoon to the media, and one of the biggest topics, of course, has been COVID-19. Bruce Arians, a three-time cancer survivor, has already said he personally take extra precautions and was among the coaches who addressed working in a bubble a short time ago.
We have a hotel sequestered now, and it's, we can't force the guys to go, so it's up to them. We have some veterans over there who do live in town because they know how safe it'll be. And we'll obviously stay there the night before home games like we always have. We've got a commitment. We talked about having a commitment to each other. It only takes one to sink the ship. I think it'll be easier to handle, although we'll still have 69 guys this year once we keep going after the cut. It's going to be a little bit harder, but it's going to take a hell of a commitment from everybody.
If there's 80 players and then another, call it 95 people, coaching, training, equipment, total number of people in your first or second tier. So basically every day, those 170 go home and then come back the next day. Take that and you times it by 7, and then you take that and times it, by 4 weeks in a month, and then do the season. It's really about trying to reduce the possible exposures, not eliminate. When you're not operating in a clean bubble like the NHL or NBA, you just have to understand, hey, there's going to be a certain amount of positive tests. I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that's not the case.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And Jeff Darlington, I know that that Peyton has this idea of making this sort of mini New Orleans Saints bubble at the Lowe's Hotel, which is right near the Superdome, where these guys are just going to stay there. Just from talking to so many guys around the league, are you getting an idea that maybe perhaps this is the direction other teams are going to start going in here?
So I don't know about the trend specifically about having a quarantine hotel that Tampa and New Orleans have both suggested. Certainly seems like other teams would consider it. But I would just point out that the interesting component here is that the NFL issues its own protocols. When you see a team like Tampa and New Orleans taking it above and beyond that, that to me gives me any level of confidence. The willingness to accept the fact that we are not going to avoid the inevitable. We're not going to ignore the inevitable of eventual positive tests. We're going to prepare for what we do as a result of that. I think if all 32 teams took on that same approach, we'd have a much better chance of getting through this season. The question becomes, are all 32 teams doing exactly that? And that's a question we'll just have to wait to find out.
Jeff, if you were on the Saints here and your head coach was saying, this is what we're going to do, this isn't what the league is saying we have to do, but this is what the New Orleans Saints are going to do, would you be buying into this idea and commit to this, knowing that, you know, you have a wife and kids at home?
Absolutely. I think they're providing their team with the best opportunities to make a decision that keeps their families and themselves as safe as possible. And again, you know, we talked about it earlier in the show. You're not saying, I'm committed to go do this every day for the rest of it. You maybe say, hey, for training camp, and then for the first few weeks, I'm going to kind of see how many guys are testing positive. What does this really look like? Are guys are they acting the way they should act? Are they going places they shouldn't go? And is that putting me at more risk? But I can assure you, allowing guys the opportunity to use a hotel that's close or that's nearby, I think it's genius. And I think every team should do it if they can, but or they can. They should all do it and at least give guys the place to go and go do this. And again, you're not just talking about the player. You know, Lewis made a point about dealing with his children and going to school. You send them back to school, you're not. How are you going to do it? Well, if you have a bunch of kids in the house and you've decided, hey, I'm going to let them be kids and go back to school, all of a sudden you're exposing yourself and now you're exposing your teammates. Or, you know, does your wife work? Is she someone who's in the hospitals and at high risk? All those things, again, players are no different than anybody else. We all have family members who are doing things that will put them at risk. And so you have to understand what that does and how that impacts your football team. And so if you have a team that's saying, hey, we're going to offer you guys this, you can use it if you want to, we would appreciate it if you do. Those are great conversations to have. Again, no one has the right answer, but at least you have options and you can make an educated decision for what's best for you and your family.
Yeah, there's no question. You have to put yourself in a position to give yourself every chance to succeed. And I think every organization needs to at least provide this kind of opportunity for the players. Look, we know that across the board, 100% of the players aren't going to make that sacrifice. Look, in society, people won't even sacrifice, you know, in terms of putting on a mask to go to a grocery store. There's a lot of people who just refuse to. They want their cake and eat it too, right? They want to be protected and have all the trappings of life, you know, that the United States has to offer you, but at the same time, they don't want to make the sacrifice to keep their fellow neighbors, you know, safe. And the same is going to happen with players in sports, unless you can put them in a 100% safe bubble and make it mandatory that they stay there. But you have to at least give them the opportunity to make a choice and to make a sacrifice that will not only benefit themselves, but benefit their loved ones, benefit their teammates, benefit their coaches and the support staff. Because as Bruce Arians has said, and just as Mike Tomlin has said, one fail, we all fail. And that's probably something that all of us need to remember. One of us fail, all of us can fail, or at least the people who are around us. Are you willing to make the sacrifice or aren't you? It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and Lou, the NBA just announced that they still have no positive COVID-19 tests inside that bubble. Yeah. So it's very clear. The bubble's working.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back. Let's talk some Dallas. There have been plenty of offseason storylines for the Cowboys. They drafted Oklahoma wide receiver CeeDee Lamb in the first round and then took Bama corner Trevon Diggs in the second round. Those rookies aren't the only newcomers in Dallas. Mike McCarthy, of course, was hired as the 9th head coach in team history. The team parted ways with Jason Garrett. And then how about Dak Prescott? His potential contract extension was the story that never really seemed to end, but they couldn't reach an agreement, and he'll play this season under the franchise tag of over $31 million. Dak didn't get his long-term deal, but you know who did? Amari Cooper. He signed a 5-year extension that included $90 million guaranteed, and he talked about the lofty expectations for this Dallas Cowboys wide receiving core yesterday.
Yeah, I think it was a great pickup. You know, you have to draft the best player on the board. Everybody understands that, and I think he's a great receiver. I think, you know, with me and Michael Gallup going for 1,000 yards last season, I think the expectation is to have 3,000 yard receivers this year.
All right, that's certainly a lot of expectation there, guys. And it sounds like Amari Cooper thinks that Dallas has got one of the strongest wide receiver groups. So let's just dive into the NFC East here. Who is challenging that group this season? Let's try to figure out who's good, who's bad, strengths, weaknesses. We'll go through all of it. So, Saturday, let's just start with you on the Cowboys here. So let's go through some of their key additions, some of their key departures here, and essentially what they look like. So what do you think of them?
Listen, I think Mike McCarthy is going to be good, but I think their biggest strength is Ezekiel Elliott, right? Can we use one of the best backs in the game? That's ultimately the best strength they have, right? Their offense needs to go through it. Their weakness is using him in important times. You think about last year when they play in Philadelphia for the playoffs and all the things, all the hype. We end up throwing it. They end up throwing it 44 times. I think he had 13 touches or 13 rushes. It cannot work that way. When you have someone as good as Ezekiel Elliott, you have got to find ways to get him the ball, hand it to him, let him go run that thing. Offense has to run through that.
All right, let's move over to New York, right? So we know that the Giants made some moves, with probably the biggest departure being Eli Manning. They went 4-12. They hired Patriots assistant Joe Judge to replace Pat Shurmur. They drafted Andrew Thomas, Xavier McKinney to go along with free agent additions James Bradbury. And we mentioned the whole Eli departing after those 16 seasons. But again, another new head coach and a young quarterback here. So, Lewis, strengths and weaknesses for this New York Giants team?
Yeah, I think for strengths, it obviously starts on offense with those two young building blocks that they have at quarterback and running back in Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. Look, Daniel Jones, the number one thing he has to learn how to do is to protect the football in the pocket, no doubt about it. Steve Young calls it, he has to be two places at once. Learn how to be two places at once. Learn how to know what's around him in the pocket, but at the same time, being able to pick out wide receivers down the field. And Saquon, we know right now, look, he's arguably maybe the most talented running back in the National Football League. He just needs to have more opportunities in the run and pass game. As far as their weaknesses are concerned, really, it starts on the defensive side, and it starts with pass rush. This is a football team that isn't adept enough at creating enough havoc around the quarterback to where they can create more turnovers. But they were 28th in forced turnovers last year, and they need to really create that in order to be more successful on defense. They gave up 31 plus points in 9 different games last year. They're going to have to create a little bit more turnovers, create a little bit more confusion on the defensive side if they're able to make any headway in the NFC East for sure.
Yeah, so those two teams you already talked about are dealing with that idea of having a new head coach. 3 out of the 4 teams in the NFC East are dealing with that. The team that seems to have it all together, though, it's the Philadelphia Eagles in terms of their GM, head coach, and their quarterback returning this season, right? So they won the NFC East last season, reaching the playoffs for the 3rd straight year. Their notable additions include 3-time Pro Bowler Darius Slay, as well as draft picks Jalen Reagor and Jalen Hurts. And their biggest loss, of course, is safety Malcolm Jenkins, who's now with the New Orleans Saints. He started every game during that 6-year run in Philly. So, Darlington, give me the strengths and weaknesses of the Philadelphia Eagles now.
Maybe a little bit of a surprise here to say that I'm going to take my strength over to the defensive side of the ball, mostly because I always loved what defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz has done with that group. But when you look at specifically the defensive tackles, that's where I think the real strength is. They've got 3 absolute studs up there in Fletcher Cox, Malik Jackson, Javon Hargrave. These guys allow the edge to be better because they can really rotate them in, and Schwartz loves to do that sort of a thing. So I really think that that will be a major factor for this defense. Now let's talk potential weakness, and this one might not be one that everybody agrees with, but wide receivers. I just want to see them stay healthy for this group to really be successful when it comes to DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, and I know they drafted 3 speedy guys in the draft. I don't know that they're there yet, and they need that for Carson Wentz. It could be a talented group. We're just gonna have to wait and see on those guys. I think it's a potential weakness that could very quickly become a big-time strength.
Yeah, all right, let's go down 95 South to the Washington, D.C. area, where we know the team changed their name. They also hired Ron Rivera as the team head coach. After finishing in last place in the NFC East in 2019, they drafted Chase Young, though, 2nd overall, to add to a very, very strong defensive line that they already got there. So Washington finally parted ways with Trent Williams, trading him to the Niners for 2 future picks. Jeff, Saturday, what do you like about Washington?
I'm going to say their defensive front is the strength for me. And you think, you know, I know you put up Ron Rivera, who's a great coach. Jack Del Rio, the defensive coordinator, will be a huge addition for them as well. This team could be special up front. You got Payne, obviously drafting Chase Young. These guys can flat out get after the quarterback. They're stout in the middle. Can they play together? I think that's when Jack Del Rio does so well. He gets everybody involved. Everybody can get after the quarterback. So I'm excited about that. Weakness, I was going to say Trent Williams let go of one of the best left tackle game, but I'm going to go quarterback. And here's why. They got to make a decision with Clayne Haskins. This is the year to do it. Is he your guy, right? Get him in the draft. It's where you want to be. Is he the guy who's going to lead the football team? And you heard Ron Rivera talk about Alex Smith, I think, is a miraculous story, but ultimately this is Clayne Haskins' job. Can he take it to the next level and put this football team where they need to be?
All right, we've laid it all out, guys, the good and the bad. So make your picks. Jeff Darlington, let's go with you. The NFC East, who is going to win the division?
I'm going Dallas Cowboys. I think that this is the year for them. We'll see how far they go, but I think they will win the division.
All right, Lewis.
No way is it Dallas. Jeff, it's Philadelphia. They have the most continuity. That weakness is going to be a strength for them, provided they stay healthy. This is the Carson Wentz year, baby.
Spoken like a South Jersey.
Go Philadelphia.
Saturday, who you got?
I'm going Cowboys. I think Kellen Moore, McCarthy get together with Dak. Zeke Elliott's going to run it through the running back. Let that offensive line bang some people around and give your defense some rest. You don't got to go throw it to all these receivers. I know they all think they're going to have 1,000 yards. Let's use that running back. I think the Cowboys get it.
All right, they didn't give me one, but I'm going Eagles, too. The Eagles won the NFC East last season, but, guys, remember, in this division, it's been a really long time since a team came back and won it again. In fact, it was the Eagles who did it back in 2003.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Guys, it's already August. ESPN Fantasy Football is back. Go check it out on ESPN.com/fantasyfootball. And the real question is, should you maybe be thinking about adding Antonio Brown to your lineup?
Hey, B, he's a guy that's going to bring the best out you, you know. I feel like he could fit in this locker room. He's a guy that's competitive, and, you know, he's going to go out there and give 100%. And seeing stuff like that going to make other guys, you know, want to do the same.
All right, that's obviously coming from his cousin who plays on the Ravens. So, Jeff, what's the likelihood of AB joining the Ravens?
Well, having people advocate for him like Marquise and like Lamar Jackson in an organization that has stability are all great things in terms of Antonio Brown's outlook. It's still a matter of what Harbaugh thinks, what the team ultimately feels. I would say that the likelihood is definitely highest when it comes to the Ravens. It makes the most sense, and they haven't said no just yet, Diana.
No, they have not. Guys, I started the show saying you're the best panel, and I'm going to end the show saying you are the best panel, guys. Thanks for joining NFL Live.